welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, with me as your host, Chris Email Pest McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. On this installment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we have managed to persuade the artist behind some of my favourite G.I. Joe covers of recent times, Jamie Sullivan, to chat with us about his fantastic artwork. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this Comics Burst. On tonight's show, we have an artist responsible for some absolutely incredible covers, and for G.I. Joe no less. When we posted his Ace vs. Cobra Night Ravens cover art, it literally shut our Facebook page down in minutes. The process was repeated for his X-30 Conquests vs. the Terradrome, Skyhawks vs. His Tanks, and then most recently with that awesome Shark vs. the Cobra Moray. The man is on fire with the vehicle covers right now, and it certainly isn't the only thing he draws. Please welcome to the show the awesome Jamie Sullivan. Thank you for jumping on. How are you doing, bud?
Good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First off, could you give us a little background about yourself, please? Like, how did you get into art and comics, and when did it become your profession?
Oh, gosh. I've been drawing since I was a little kid. Professionally, I've been drawing for about, I would say, a good 20-plus years.
Wow.
I've worked for toy companies. I worked for Disney, and that's probably where I decided that I wanted to get into comic books. Disney was... When I first started to work for him, I thought I had succeeded, and that was as far as I was going to go. And then after the first year, I was like, how do I get out of this place? So I spent another 5 years there and finally got out and started working in comics. And freelance is wonderful.
Yeah.
But it doesn't pay like Disney did. And, yeah. But I love it. I have a great time. My kids have grown up in this industry, going to conventions with me. And,
awesome.
You know, my family is pretty well known in the convention circuit. Like, everybody that goes to shows, like, know my daughters. My oldest daughter works for some conventions.
That's great.
But I would love to do more stuff, but I'm having a lot of, I don't just draw G.I. Joe right now. I draw Robotech for Harmony Gold and Toyonami. I just took a project for Lucasfilm for Star Wars. So that was huge for me.
Can you tell us much about that? Or is that
the Lucasfilm? The Lucasfilm stuff is for Celebration.
Awesome.
I can tell you it is for the 40th anniversary of something that happens next year, which a movie didn't come out in 79. So you have to kind of think about what was the 40th anniversary in 79. What came out in 79 that could possibly be celebrating a 40th anniversary? So that's a little tip right there.
Interesting.
But it's been a lot of fun, and I might possibly have something coming up with Transformers. Ooh. So I'm really excited about that.
Is that going to be for the toy line, or is that going to be for the comic?
It's going to be for IDW.
Brilliant. Wow.
And I have a lot more Joe stuff coming up. You have it, like... I'm really happy that you like this stuff that I've done so far.
Love it.
There is something, a cover that I spent about 3 weeks on.
Wow.
It's a set of connecting covers.
No, don't tell me that. Oh, it's going to be amazing.
I'll have a picture up soon, but I will tell you it features all of the original 13 Joe members in their original uniforms.
Wow.
And the original 7 vehicles that came out.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to see that. Okay.
I can't wait for you guys to see it either, because it was ridiculous trying to draw it. I will tell you, the original art for it is 6.5 feet long.
Wow. Is it painted? Yeah. Did you paint it?
No, it is all penciled and inked.
Wow.
And it is going to be digitally painted. Roger Vandebeek, who is my digital painter right now, digital colorist, he is the one that did the Storm Shadow versus Snake Eyes cover that I just finished, and the Shark versus the Moray. He did the digital paints on that. He's going to be doing it, so I'm really, really excited.
Great. That's going to break our Facebook page again, no doubt.
I hope so. You know what I'm anxious to see is a lot of the original costumes on those covers, you know, go back to the very first figures that came out. I'm anxious to see what people think about Snake Eyes, because you know, he had the same legs as like Flash and Grand Slam.
Yeah,
I mean, if you break it down, if you he painted. It's a fairly goofy costume that he has. So I'm anxious to see what people think, because it is true to the original costumes.
That's great. I think people will love it for that. And all, you know, you're talking about hardcore Joe fans. They know their action figures. They know what that figure looks like. So yeah, that I think that's going to be great. And honestly, the work you've done on the previous vehicle covers that we've been talking about is just phenomenal. And as I said off air before we started this recording, that Ace and the Night Ravens cover is just unbelievable. Anyway, I've skipped ahead quite dramatically. I was going to ask you a couple of questions. One is, I mean, were you a G.I. Joe fan as a kid? Was that kind of your era?
I was born in 1973, so it was kind of the perfect storm for me. Mm. Of course, I fell in love with Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I collected that. And when G.I. Joe came out, I was still a huge fan. You know, there was a bit of a lull waiting for Return of the Jedi when it first appeared.
Yeah.
And yeah. So yeah, I got into it. You know, they were the same size as Star Wars figures, but they were better articulated, but they fit in the vehicles. And I grew up in a very, very small town in Northern California.
Yeah.
And my closest friend was miles away. And when you're a little kid, you know, you don't get to go a lot of places when you live like in a rural area like that. So I had a ton of toys. I even had the aircraft carrier.
You were the one.
I was the one, yeah. I was the one. But hey, don't feel bad, because when I was I wanted to keep all of that stuff. Oh. But when I was a teenager and I was away for the summer.
No, don't tell me. Don't tell me what you're going to say.
And my mom sold it all at a yard sale.
Oh my goodness. I hope she sold the flag as a coffee table and got like actual money for it, you know.
No, I think she got like $100 for all of my G.I. Joe toys, and I pretty much had everything through the wave with the aircraft carrier. And the only thing she didn't sell were some of my Star Wars toys, and that's because she couldn't find the box.
Wow.
But yeah, I've managed to piece quite a bit of the collection back together.
Wow.
I'm not one of the hardcore fans that has to have all the variants from, you know, overseas. And I really enjoy just the ones. And I only like the ones from 82 to 87, because that's when I collected.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm happy with all of those. I don't have to get into all that other stuff.
Sure.
But I'm a huge fan. When you look at those covers, I sit down and I use toys for reference. I measure them out.
Yeah.
I try and figure out how I can make them look a little more ominous. Mm. The hiss, when I did the hiss tanks versus the Skyhawks cover.
Yeah.
The way to get the hiss tanks to look larger was not to show the driver. And when you put somebody in the turret, make them about a third of the size to maybe half the size of what they would normally be. So that the vehicle looks larger. I mean, the hiss tank is a great design, but it's a little small.
Yeah.
The toy's a little small, but yeah, they're accurate to the toy.
That's awesome. I was going to say that's, I could tell that really from the X-30 image, you know, where you've got the kind of rear of the planes attacking the, you know, kind of, you can see from the back of them basically. There's a real quality in how you've kind of taken the scale into that drawing. Like, they just look perfect. And that is such a good dynamic shot too. And what I loved about the Skyhawks versus his tanks is you can really feel that movement of the Skyhawks almost like slowing down and coming into like a VTOL kind of, you know, kind of position almost. You know what I mean? Like, you can feel, you almost feel it happening on the page because of the way it's kind of like constructed. So yeah, props to you on that. That's really solid.
I appreciate that. Yeah. The original idea for when I did the vehicle covers, when I talked to my editor, Tom Waltz, was to imagine what it would be like, the covers would look like, if you had the opportunity to have them look real from how you played when you were a child.
Wow.
Like the if you had your friends over and you were Ace, and those were the those were the Night Ravens flying below you, and you got to, you know, kind of turn over and bank downwards into it. And, you know, there's a little nod, like there's a camera, you know, it's almost like there's a camera. There's Ace looking at the camera, like, you know, pointing in his eyes, he sees you, and then pointing down.
That's brilliant.
Technically, it's supposed to be you're the pilot of another Sky Striker, and he's looking at you, letting you know that we're going in. Every time I do a cover, one of the things I do that because it's not really, the covers really don't match what's going on in the book.
Sure.
But I come up with a plot for the I want my cover to tell a story.
Yeah.
So, you know, like with the ace in the Sky Striker versus the Night Ravens, you'll notice on one of the Night Ravens, the hog is gone off the back.
Brilliant.
And so ace may think that he's got, you know, the drop on him and stuff, but where's the drone? Where's the drone at? And so that's, I kind of want like people to, when they see it, to be able to read into that and get more out of the cover than just like, that's a cool image.
That's amazing. You know? Well, let's stay on that cover for a second. So what gave you the idea to kind of, especially for the kind of composition, because it's something that I'm not sure I think one of the main reasons I loved it so much was because I hadn't really seen it before. I hadn't really seen that kind of visual on a comic cover. I'm sure there are comic covers that have that kind of high up, you know, looking at the earth kind of scenario. But
sure.
I don't think I've ever seen that kind of composition before. And I think that was that originality is one of the reasons I really kind of just immediately loved it. How did you come up with that particular idea? Did you see something and get inspired, or how did it come about?
You know, I was watching a 3D movie in IMAX, and I'll be honest with you, I can't remember which one it was, but I liked the visual of something close to camera.
Yeah.
And then it's a flat image, but you can play with the depth just by the lines and lack of lines. So when you look at it, the lines of the Sky Striker and Ace are thick and they're a little more focused. And then when you get down to the Night Ravens, the lines are thin because they're further away. And then the ground, there isn't any lines. There's no outline. It's just color.
Yeah.
And so what that does is create an illusion of depth.
So effective.
Yeah. And I wanted to draw like planes. Like I grew up on the Herb Trimpe and the Mike Vosburgh covers. And I love, you know, and the Mike Zeck stuff, you know, where he's like,
oh, yeah,
the camera's over the wing of the plane. And I've always loved those, but they weren't quite, you know, realistic.
Yeah.
And they were definitely, you know, comic book style and dramatized. So I wanted to do something, you know, believe it or not, the Night Ravens cover wasn't the first vehicle. I had drawn other vehicle ones before that. The Night Ravens cover is the one that just clicked with people.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get that feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And it was important to me that the vehicles looked, even though there's some wild vehicles in G.I. Joe, especially Cobra.
I can't wait to see your Swamp Masher cover.
Just crazy, crazy, you know, but grounded in reality. And, you know, again, with the Night Ravens, you can't see the pilots because it gives you the idea of scale.
Yeah.
If I put it where it's the, you know, the figure in there, the pilot's way too large for that vehicle. So
It looks great. It was definitely, I think it was one of those covers. I'm not saying you weren't known beforehand, but you certainly kind of came to the forefront with that cover, almost like became a household name between, you know, with myself and a couple of other guys who, like, you know, read the comics religiously. It's just one of those things, though, as an artist, it's difficult, I think, from my perspective, looking at the people working on it, it's difficult to make a name for yourself unless you have, you know, like the billing on the cover and all that kind of stuff. And if you're a cover artist on, like, you know, retailer incentives and stuff like that, I think it's been great that Tom Waltz has been, like, pushing all of these different things on Twitter, because that's that's where I was kind of like, oh, brilliant, you know, like, you know, trying, actually finding out who is responsible, because that isn't always very easy either. Like, we're always actively looking to find out who drew something in, like, I don't know, in like the 80s run, but then even now in like the more more recent times, I found that really difficult, especially when you're considering like the internet is like, you know, you should be able to find out any information about these kind of things at the, you know, the click of a finger, basically.
Right. Well, IDW has been really, really great with that. And like you said, sharing it on Twitter. But actually, you know, inside the issue, they'll put, you know, in the front cover, in the inside front cover, they'll put like the different covers, who drew them,
how many
different variants there are for it. And on the back above the barcode, they put my name too.
That's great.
Which is really, really cool. And it makes a good for finding things, because, you know, putting your signature on the cover for the Night Ravens, you won't see my signature on the cover. It's covered up by the ARC title at the bottom. A couple of my other covers, the signature's covered up, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I'm just glad that people like the covers enough that they'll actually, you know,
make a podcast about it.
Yeah. And you know, what's really good too is before I was like, oh, bummer, my cover is on the retailer incentive and not the regular cover. But then I think about it, and it's actually kind of an honor, because if you think about what it is, it's a retailer incentive. They like the cover so much that it incentivizes retailers to order 10 copies just to get one of mine, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Like, there's another cover that he hasn't shown yet. He hasn't shown anything on Twitter. And it's for one of these Vehicle Versus covers, but it's really weird. It's not really a Versus cover as much as it's a vehicle. It features the Jump Jetpacks.
Oh, wicked. Okay, cool.
And it's an interesting perspective. Some people have seen me in cons, have seen it, but it features Duke, Scarlet, and Tunnel Rat, and they are flying out of the middle of a bunch of buildings in Springfield.
Well, that sounds cool.
They're flying away from the Executive Enterprises building.
Nice.
And it's blowing up.
Oh, wow.
Why I think he's holding off is because it's the only cover I've done that I had pushback from Hasbro, where they emailed me directly and said, can you explain to me what's going on in this cover?
Really?
And I knew exactly what they were talking about, because after I drew it, I looked at it and I was like, holy shit, the Joes are committing domestic terrorism. I didn't even think about when I was drawing. I came up with this story and I was like, wow, this is going to turn out really cool. And then I was like, oh, shit. They're blowing up like a skyscraper.
I can see how that's in this, you know, time, in this current climate as well. Yeah, I can see how that could be very sensitive, totally.
Exactly. So I had to come up with this whole plot that Duke and Scarlet were trapped, and Tunnel Rat flies in with a couple extra jump jetpacks, break him out, a firefight ensues, and the Crimson Guard blow up one of the levels of the Executive Enterprises building while they're making an escape. And that the guys from Hounds were like, holy shit, that's awesome. When in reality, it's they're blowing up the building. But after that, I put Easter eggs in every one of my covers, and I'll tell you on here about it. On that cover that we were just talking about, on Duke's sleeve, there's a little red circle patch.
Oh, okay.
In some of the older like cartoons and stuff, he had like a little patch on his sleeve, like a red circle. So I put the AT, the Adventure Team logo in it.
Oh, brilliant.
And Hasbro was like, why is that on there? And I was like, well, it's just like, you know, a hats off to the guys that collected back in, you know, from 63 to the late 70s. And they said, well, he doesn't really wear that patch. I explained to him it was drawn in some of the comics and stuff, but it didn't have the AT. And I, don't worry, when it reduces, you won't really notice it. And they were finally okay with it. So that cover, like I said, he hasn't really pitched that, because I think he thinks it's going to make some waves because of the whole, people might read into the domestic terrorists.
Sure.
I'm going to be infamous for the guy that drew the domestic terrorist. cover.
Jamie Sullivan hates America. That kind of thing, right?
Which I totally don't.
Of course.
You know, it's crazy. And so
this is the thing, though, when you're dealing with something like G.I. Joe as a property, if you take anything from, you know, the 80s and kind of put it into kind of now, and you kind of modernize it a little bit, it doesn't have the same effect. And in some kind of aspects, it does come across a little bit like, oh, you can't really do that. Like, that's, you know, probably not on.
Yeah.
And no, I can totally understand that. But I can also see from your point of view how you wouldn't have even thought about it. Like, you're just thinking, oh, this is amazing. This looks great. And then, you know, someone mentions, what's going on?
Yeah, right.
I mean, is there a lot of kind of contact with IDW? Is a lot of, not IDW, but like IDW Hasbro, you know, are you doing a lot of negotiation to get a lot of this stuff out?
No, actually, they're really, really cool. The first cover I ever did, you know, there's a couple of changes that they wanted.
Yeah.
And after that, they, you know, I send it in, and, you know, I'll send a couple versions, like the Shark versus the Moray.
Yeah.
There is one that has the guns aren't firing.
Okay.
And so I sent both versions in, and why not just do them? I don't know which ones Hasbro's going to approve. And Tom's like, I like the one with the gunfire. And that's the one he submitted. And it came back, like, he emailed me like 5 hours later and said, Hasbro love it, approved.
Wow.
I was like, okay, awesome. You know, because you don't know, because it is ultimately a toy line for children. And yeah. So, you know, and I remember when I was a kid, you know, sometimes the rockets would be firing and the guns would be firing, and sometimes they wouldn't. And it would actually, you know, say on the box, guns don't fire, you know, the guns don't actually fire and stuff. So there's not a lot of pushback. And some of the fans should be happy that, for most part, when I do the covers, I try to stick to the, like I said, the 82 to the 87 stuff when it was America's highly trained special mission force.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, you know, we live in a larger world now where there isn't the same boundaries and borders that there were in 1982.
Sure.
But I think that G.I. Joe could still be an American team, you know, fighting terrorism around the world. You know, Cobra doesn't have to be just out to get America.
Yeah.
But G.I. Joe, and I know there's some pushback that from some of the fans that, you know, like with the movies where G.I. Joe was an international team, it can still be that. But the core team, if it's going to be funded by the U.S. government, should probably be a U.S. team.
That was the least amount of issue with that movie. There was there was so many other issues with that I had.
So many other issues. Yeah. So many other issues. But it was one of a plethora of things that were wrong with that movie.
You know? agreed on that. Coming back to the IDW job in general, how did that first stunner start? How did you get into working for IDW as a freelancer?
Well, I've known Tom for about 10 years.
Cool.
My wife and I, on the side, when I left Disney, we opened up a comic book store.
Oh, cool.
And we had Tom and other guys, since we're close to San Diego, we had Tom and a lot of the other guys from IDW come up and do signings. And they loved it. You know, I worked in the industry, so, you know, I knew how to take care of them. And
yeah.
And we got to be good friends. And Tom didn't really know that I could draw. And then he saw me. He knew me as the guy that owned the comic book store.
Yeah.
And I was really weird about showing my stuff, like featuring my stuff in the shop.
Okay.
I kept a lot of what I did separate from the store. And so a lot of people that came in there had no idea that I worked in the industry. And it just made it more comfortable for me.
Yeah.
But I ran into Tom and we were talking, and I was looking for some cover work. And this is before he had G.I. Joe. He was still on Turtles, writing Turtles and editing some other books.
Yeah.
And I gave him like a little portfolio I put together, and he looked down. He's like, you already know I love your stuff. I've seen your stuff. And I think you'd be perfect for something that I'm getting ready to start. And he's like, I can't really talk about it, but I'm getting ready to take over G.I. Joe, editing on G.I. Joe.
Awesome.
And so we talked a little bit, and he like quizzed me, like, do you know what this vehicle is? And I was like giving him the stats and stuff, and like it came with this figure and it was released the second time in 83 with swivel arm battle grip, and like he's like, holy like I found the right guy. And the first cover I did wasn't a success because he kind of described like something he had in his head, and I put it together, and it wasn't really my style. It wasn't really his. It was kind of a amalgam of both. And then we started talking about the vehicle covers, and he saw what I was doing. And he was like, holy shit. And I had finished a couple, and then I finished the Night Ravens and the Ace, and that's when he shared it.
Yeah, and that's when the internet broke. Yeah.
It went crazy. He messaged me, and he goes, I got to tell you, I've been posting on IDW's Twitter page for years, and Turtle stuff, Transformers, G.I. Joe, you name it. And the Night Ravens cover was the most likes and retweets IDW has ever gotten.
Wow. I think most of them were me, though, honestly.
Really?
I retweeted a lot. Well, I mean, yeah, it was just great. I remember posting that on the Facebook page and the Twitter page, and both of them blew up. We had like hundreds of likes on the Facebook page, and I mean we're only at like 2,000 something, you know, page likes and followers, But it was one of the biggest things we've posted ever.
I'm glad it happened for you, because on my old Facebook page that's not up anymore, I had nearly 20,000 fans, and I posted it, and it didn't have like G.I. Joe across the top, but I posted it and said it was a Joe cover that was coming out, and I got like 15 likes, and one
really?
Person that commented and said neat.
That's crazy.
So I'm really happy that happened for you.
That is crazy. And you've got 20,000 people on there.
Yeah, I got rid of that page because, you know, Facebook would email and say,
oh, the reach thing, right?
If you want people to see this, you know, you need to pay for these ads. And I was like, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I feel that's the way with Facebook now. It's gone. It used to be great for marketing, and now it's just awful.
Yeah, because that's how they have to. And I get it, to make their money, you know. But I'm not going to be the one that's paying them. So,
well, not when I don't see anything back for it. That's the problem. It's such a convoluted system, and everything's like, yeah, you put this amount down, and then, you know, depending on what happens, like, well, just how much do I have to pay, and how many people is it going to see? Simple as that. Why make it so confusing and you know, and like it'll only get to these countries or whatever? It's like, forget it. I'm the same now. I don't pay for any of that stuff. I just put it up there and it's there. It's just almost, I use it as a storage facility.
Exactly. Yeah, I would pay like $100 a month, and then, you know, I would sell like a print for $20. Yeah. Like, there's no, you know, there was no return. Get, you know, like 100 likes, well, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
you know,
it really doesn't.
And so, yeah, so I just have my personal page on Facebook, and people, you know, fans find me on there. When I'm up late drawing and stuff, I draw a lot at night. Fans will message me and friends, and they'll, you know, like, what are you working on? Ask me questions. And it's really good too, because I get feedback, because I'll say like, well, I'm doing this, and, you know, they'll be like, oh, well, I would love to see this and that in the cover. And it's kind of fun. You know, I've gotten interesting tips, and I've had questions answered that I had forgotten, and I didn't really want to sit down and Google, look for it. And it's kind of cool. And Sharp Eyed fans next month, when they see the Hiss Tank versus the Skyhawks.
Yeah.
In the background, the Cobra Temple that they're escaping is the original Cobra Temple from the Sumbo cartoon.
Oh, that's amazing. I did wonder, actually, because I've seen the cover.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that was, you know, if that was an homage to that. So that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's my little tip of the hat to those cartoons and to Larry Houston.
Oh yeah.
Who I'm friends with, and he did great design work on those shows. I'm really good friends with Mike Vosberg too. Awesome. And I always run a lot of my covers past Mike to see what he thinks.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When are we going to see the Jamie Sullivan Robo Skull cover? Because that has to happen.
Never know, though. I'm going to be doing, I've been working out something where I'm going to be doing some variants that you'll be able to get directly through me.
Awesome.
So you never know. I might get into some of the, you know, deep cuts of G.I. Joe. So some crazy stuff.
Well, I would personally appreciate that, but I'm not. No pressure, obviously.
No pressure.
Are you getting to the point now where you want to get back into focusing on characters on the Joe books? You know, you have mentioned the original 13 that you're going to be doing, or have done, the Tunnel Rat, Scarlet and Duke kind of jetpack thing. Are kind of characters, you know, they're starting to bleed into these covers now by the sounds of things. And obviously you have done covers with characters on them, but I was wondering if that was something that, you know, you got to the point where you're like, okay, enough of the vehicles now, let's get back towards the characters. Is that kind of happening in a weird way?
Well, what's really funny about that is with G.I. Joe, a lot of the vehicles are characters.
Yeah, true. Very
true.
They
really are. Like, you know, they were sold with a driver, but the vehicle was more the character.
Yeah. Well, they're iconic, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Like the whale, you know, the hovercraft. Like, who really cares about Cutter? I mean, seriously.
a lot of Boston fans recently probably cared about him.
Yeah. Well, that's about it. How many of them know that he's the pilot of the whale?
Nobody.
But, but yeah, so, I mean, there are things that are iconic that can still be worked in as the vehicles can still be worked in as characters. And that's kind of how I treat the vehicles when I'm drawing them, that they are.
Yeah.
they are characters and they should be doing something. Like, that's why I drew the shark popping out of the water, because it can fly, right?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to draw it as just a submarine, otherwise it's kind of boring.
Did you put the flag in the background on that kind of after the fact, or was that one of those things that you had, were you planning on doing that the whole time, or did you just say, there's a bit of space there, I can just put a flag there?
No, I had always planned to put the flag in it because I had always planned to have Sky Strikers.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
But I wanted to make, it's hard to make stuff in the ocean look exciting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You need a wave. You need a wave.
Yeah. I hate drawing water too. Water is the, if you go into my Facebook page, I have the black and white inks on there.
Yeah.
That water is hyper detailed. And then when I was talking, Roger lives in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him and he got it. And he's like, you know, I could have just faked this. You could have just drawn a couple lines and said, this is supposed to be the water. And I was like, oh my God, you tell me that now. Like, I spent 2 days drawing that water, wanting to kill myself.
You could have just written water on it.
Yeah. Like, he's like, you could have, if you wanted a wave going this way, all you had to have drawn is a black arrow. And I would have put in a way, and I'm like, you're killing me.
That's brilliant.
You're killing me. But because I did so much work on it, he let the lines come through on a lot of it.
Sure.
Yeah, but I was like, I was so frustrated. I was so frustrated.
But to be honest, though, it does. I think that is better that you go the extra mile with the detail, though, in all honesty. Because obviously then when you do like the black and white kind of prints and stuff like that, at least you've got... At least you've got that detail still in there, you know?
Yeah, I've kind of been bugging Tom about maybe doing like an RIB cover where it's like an artist edition where it shows like the line work, because what a lot of people don't know is I don't draw anything digital.
Yeah.
The line work is pencils and India ink and pens and a lot of whiteout, you know?
Yeah.
Old school Photoshop and just... And putting it down, pen to paper, and then scanning it. I like digital, and I have a Cintiq and all that stuff, but there's just a certain weight to the lines that no matter what algorithm they come up with, you just can't get it digitally. And also, happy accidents don't happen in the digital world. If you screw something up, you just hit back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or you delete it. And when you're drawing it pen to paper, if you mess something up and you've already gone so far, then you're like, how do I get myself out of this? Do I do a paste over? Can I white it out? Just screw it and then draw something else here, you know, because this didn't turn out the way you wanted it. And that's happened sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't get that with digital. And that's one of the reasons I still like doing it that way. And I also draw really large, too. A lot of artists only draw on 11 by 17. I draw on old school watercolor board.
Wow.
That is 24 by 16.
Well, I suppose that helps to get the details in there, doesn't it, as well?
Oh, yeah. They're it's huge. And my vision is not great. And it's huge. It's really, really large. And so I get it.
I imagine you have a giant pencil as well. And you. What you were doing
that. No.
One of those novelty pencils that are like 20 feet tall kind of thing, just like that.
I wish, let me tell you, there are times when I'm inking, like I wish I had something bigger than this little pen, and I'm like, holy crap, it's a lot. Like the water,
yeah,
the water is a nightmare. And then when you see the jetpack,
yeah,
when you see it on the cover, you know, the cover's small, but that I drew all of those buildings by hand and those little windows.
I can't wait to see that. I cannot wait.
It is a nightmare. It was a nightmare to draw.
Well, just imagine your pain is everybody else's pleasure. So, you know, the pain that you're going through, that like when it actually comes out and people see it like us, we're just, you know, in awe. We love it. We soak it up. We enjoy it. So at least there's, you know, there's a point to all of that. You're not just doing it for the, you know, for some sort of weird kick.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy seeing it when it's done too. There's nothing I've drawn though that's hanging up in the house. Like I don't like to look at my own stuff after a while. Really? Yeah. When we do shows too, like I'll talk to people come up and I'll have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
My wife usually doesn't be selling this stuff because I'll be like, yeah, it's okay. But look, here's where I screwed up on this. And like, I can't, because I see it like after I've got it done, I was like, oh, that.
Yeah,
that's cool. But that I could have done differently, or that's better.
Actively screwing yourself over. for all those
people.
Yeah,
and she's like, shut up.
Although you say that, but I've had conversations with people about that, you know, like other artists at kind of conventions and stuff, and they've done the same thing because it's, I mean, it's one of those mediums, isn't it? A lot of artists, a lot of creatives are very self-deprecating, very hard on themselves, like, you know, really like tough on, you know, that comes with kind of like a perfectionist vibe too, isn't it? Like, you know, you never can quite be satisfied with what you do. But at the same time, it can be a selling point because people like to know more information about the drawing and like the print. And then when they have it, they've got these like anecdotes to tell other people and stuff like that. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that you do that because it's not that person's going to be looking at it now going, oh, I can't. He made a mistake on that, and now I can't unsee it. Like, that just isn't the case, really, you know?
Yeah, it happened with my first Joe cover, which was issue 248. Mm. And that one was shared, and it got picked. I mean, like, I got ripped apart by Joe fans.
Really?
Like, they were like, hostile. And they're like, well, first of all, I kind of did what I was told with that cover. I wasn't kind of given free rein.
Sure.
And so I didn't use like the toy for the Rattlers. I used, you know, A10 Warthogs, and people were like, stop about that. And then Zartan was drawn, you know, he looked young.
Right.
But my pushback was like, how do you really know like what Zartan looks like? Like,
they're shapeshift. Yeah, he can be anything.
Zartan should look like this, and I'm like, well, if I could do that, I would look 25 all the time, you know. So there was, you know, they were giving me crap about that, and they were giving me crap about the Arashikage symbol in the background. They're like, it's not quite the right size, and like, you're seriously measuring that?
Wow.
And then
I'm a Joe fan, but I'm not like that. Like, that's kind of crazy.
I thought I would never work on G.I. Joe again. It was, they were like being so hard on me. And then what's really funny though is for the layout of the cover, there's one mistake I did on purpose just for layout, and not one person noticed it. And that is Dr. Mindbender's monocle is on the wrong eye.
Oh, right.
And they didn't, not one person said anything. They're like,
too busy measuring the Arashikage symbol by the sounds of it. Yeah.
Like the biggest glaring mistake, and not one person noticed it. It was dying. But yeah, you know, when I talked to Tom about it, I apologized and stuff, and he's like, hey, you know what? It's just a comic book.
Yeah.
Calm down. And that's when a couple issues later that I started doing the vehicle covers, and then everybody kind of forgot about 248. Like, I didn't even bring it up. I just like, I did that cover too.
I'm still going to flash it up on the video, but I feel your pain on that one because you can't really win, and especially with the people that are always ripping things apart, they're not going to be the ones that are going to be posting positive things if there's nothing negative to say about it. So you're only going to be getting the negative people saying negative things. You're never going to be getting the negative people saying positive things. So you just kind of have to focus on those good people, honestly. Like, you know yourself when something isn't 100% what you wanted it to be, but at the same time, you're like, I just say screw them all. Anyway, there goes half of all of our listenership. I'm kidding. I love our listeners. Is there a property you haven't worked on yet that you would love to flex your artistic muscles on?
I would really love to draw Star Wars for Marvel.
Awesome.
So that would that's probably my, like, would be the pinnacle of my comic book career. You know, I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan. It's probably G.I. Joe is only second to Star Wars for me.
Yeah. And you have done some Star Wars stuff recently as well, so that's good. At least you're kind of going the right direction with that. Without sounding really patronized. That sounded really patronizing, like I was patting you on the head and going, well, well done. You're already on the path to that. I didn't mean it to sound that way. But that's great. Like, that's awesome. And I'd love to see you doing some Star Wars stuff, really.
I would, I would love to draw Star Wars. Superhero stuff, I mean, you know, my favorite superhero as far as like major superhero is Superman, so I mean that would kind of be fun, but that's not my forte, is drawing the big like muscle bound guys you know in tights and stuff. I mean, I can do it, but I don't like actively.
Well, that's another thing, isn't it? Like, if you're not passionate about it to draw it, then it's like it's not even a thing to me. Like, as a you know, if you're an artist, it's like you should only really be focusing on the things that you're really getting, you know, you're enjoying doing, because then the passion comes out on the page, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
Well, that kind of brings us to the end of the interview. Jamie, thank you so much for jumping on the show, discussing your art. Really appreciate it. Where can people find you and your art?
Let's see. On Facebook, I don't really have, like, I could tell you the address, but I don't know it. You could probably find me. It's Jay Sullivan, J-A-Y Sullivan. It's my personal page. You can send me a friend request. I'll screen you. Like, how do I know you? You can find me on there. On Instagram, I am Jamie Sullivan Illustration.
Cool.
And on Twitter, it's JSI and Design.
Awesome. I thought it was JS Land Design. I don't know why. Probably thought that was an L.
But yeah, it stands for Jamie Sullivan Illustration and Design.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Twitter's really weird about how many characters you can use on the title. So
yeah, you don't. Yeah, if you imagine using all of those characters,
right? That would be ridiculous.
Go off the screen. That's awesome.
If you go to, if you definitely go to Facebook, there's the jump covers on there. A bunch of the covers I've done that you haven't seen yet are on the Facebook page. And you can message me. The easiest way to get a hold of me is through Facebook if you want commissions. Cool. Or if you want to buy, I have a list of people right now wanting to buy covers from the G.I. Joe series.
I want that cover.
That's long gone. That is long gone. That one sold before it was even popular.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who do I have to kill to get that comic?
Somebody in New York. I honestly can't remember his name.
I'm just going to put my jump pack on and I'm going to go fly over to the Extensive Enterprises building and commit some domestic terrorism just to get that cover. No, that's amazing, Jamie. Thank you again so much for jumping on. I really appreciate it. And once again, guys, you know, jump on the Facebook page, Instagram, all those ones. We'll be posting, reposting a lot of Jamie's stuff anyway. So you can always check it out on our Facebook page too. Again, thank you so much, Jamie. Hopefully we'll get you on again soon when a couple of other bits of art pop up. It'd be great to have you back on again.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, that's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my wonderful guest, Jamie Sullivan. See you next time. And as always, full force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you would like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback, questions, or just a troll. Look out for more of these comic bursts on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and YouTube channel from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.